Hey everybody, Coach Jonathan here, back again with another special episode in our series on team camps, this week with Team Mark Pro. They're a team based out of Northern California, however they race all around the world, as you'll hear in this episode. We took some time to discuss team camps while we were at their team camp in Marin County, California, and we discussed the usual questions like we did with Team Cliff Bar last week about how you can use a team camp to improve your fitness or, based on different types of fitness that you're carrying in, what you can get from team camp. We also dug into tactics, especially into the roles that different riders have and how they decide who's going to carry the weight in races. We discussed the context of stage racing with them as well, which is a commonly requested topic, and we'll dig into that even more this week coming up with another episode where we'll actually have Dave Christensen, who is a racer who races internationally at UCI Pro Races for Mark Pro, and he also happens to be our filmmaker here at Trainer Road, but he has a ton of experience racing in stage races all around the world. So we're going to dig deep into that in the upcoming episode as well as this episode. So without further ado, we hope you enjoy this episode with Team Mark Pro. Welcome to the podcast that's dedicated to making you a faster cyclist, the Ask a Cycling Coach podcast presented by Trainer Road. We're in a different location than normal. I'm sure you can probably hear that because we're in, almost like a small dance hall, And we are with the Mark Pro team. I'm with our CEO, Nate Pearson.
Hello.
And we are with a whole big group. We don't have enough microphones. We're with a big group of people from the Mark Pro team. We'll start, actually, and we'll go clockwise. We'll start. Phil, returning guest to the podcast, director of Mark Pro Cycling. Phil, can you introduce yourself really quick?
Yeah, hello. I'm Phil Mooney, and I am the team manager of Mark Pro Cycling.
And if you watch The Chase on YouTube, he's the one that goes, "Bottles, guys, bottles." He's Justin's manager on that one.
Yeah, I'm Justin's hype man, so that works too. Yeah.
Next.
I'm Jacob Albrecht. This is my third year on the team, and
Where are you from, and what type of racing do you specialize in?
So I'm from Santa Cruz, California. I got my start in mountain bike racing, and now I'm more of a all arounder, I guess.
Cool, yeah. Awesome, very cool.
I'm Tori Phillip. I'm from El Dorado Hills, California. This is my third year on the team, and I'd say probably an all-arounder as well. Like, nothing I'm like really particularly good at, but nothing I'm really suck at.
You do climb a lot, though.
I do climb quite a bit. Like, where I live, I'm kind of forced to, so it just kind of became something I did all the time.
Red Bull did like a small feature story, I think, last year on your climbing, because you climbed how many feet?
It was a million feet in 1 year.
It's a lot of feet.
So it was, I don't know if I'll ever do that again. It's a little excessive. So
I usually unsuccessfully try to impress people with my Everesting story, but you win on that. There's no way I could top that. Awesome. Next.
I'm Dave Christensen. I am also a rider for Mark Pro. This is my third year. And I'm also a Trainer Road employee.
Yes.
And I would say, what kind of rider am I? I don't know. I like to pedal hard.
You're a good climber. Very good climber. So Dave, if you've seen The Chase, if you've seen any of our video content, which we get complimented on regularly, it's all Dave's fault. He does a darn good job with it. So, he's our filmmaker on staff at Trainer Road too, and an absolute hammer on the bike. Next.
My name is Blake Anton. This is my second year on the team. I have been promoted or demoted this year to team captain. I've been riding for a really long time, about, I think, 18 years now. And I started running an international race program for the team last year, which has taken us to a smattering of countries so far. And yeah, we'll get to that in a little bit later on in the podcast.
Yes, good trend. I like that. Good foreshadowing there. You're like a podcaster already.
My name's Sam Boardman. This is my second year on the team, and this is going to be my fourth full season of racing. I'm originally from Washington, D.C., but I started racing bikes when I got to college at UCLA. And I was originally a runner, but then wanted to get off campus because I didn't have a car, and LA sucks if you don't have a car. So I want to be able to ride my bike around, and got on the team in October of 2016 after I had talked to Phil through my coach, and it's been a pretty amazing experience so far.
So we were just at the Cliff Bar team camp, and it's like two different worlds that we're in, right? And Blake, I think you're on both teams, right? You're on Cliff Bar for how many years?
Yeah, I actually rode for Cliff Bar for, I think, 6 years.
Okay, so yesterday I walked in Cliff Bar. within like 1 minute, six guys offer me a beer, right? And there's whiskey all around. I walked in here and there's literally a table with nothing but water and salad laid out. Everyone was, you guys are way like, you're physically smaller than them too. They are giant people. Like
really big dudes.
Yeah, the tall, big dudes. Phil, as a director, their team camp was more around building like friendship and bonding. I don't think that's your goal. What is your goal for this team camp?
I think there are always a lot of different goals that we have for a team camp. Certainly, team bonding is one of them. Although we tend to bond over, our guys have lots of very serious goals and aspirations. And so it's bonding over encouraging each other and helping each other along. You were talking about the atmosphere of camp. I was very proud this morning. The trainer road guys brought us a bunch of donuts from Johnny's Donuts.
I had no part in this.
After Phil specifically said, do not bring donuts.
And I was happy that they remained uneaten, except for the one that I ate. But other than that, they remained uneaten. But so we certainly do, I think, have a lot of team building and fun. And these guys, a lot of them will tell you, you know, off the bike are very good and best friends around too. But they do have big goals, and this is the start of a big season for a lot of people. And, you know, this is racing bikes is their life. And so they're here to train hard. You know, this podcast is about the different places in the season that these guys are coming from. You know, we're about to go to a big UCI stage race in the Dominican Republic. Like they fly out on Tuesday or Wednesday, you know, which is, it's Saturday night right now that we're talking to you. So there's some serious racing going on soon. Other ones are different parts in the season, but, everyone here is, very serious about their lifestyle as an athlete.
Yeah. And when I walked in here too, like you had, there's tables full of like your H24 and sponsor stuff. Everything was laid out, bottles galore. Right behind us, they're taking headshots of everyone on the team. We had a photo session. So what did they do today? Like, first off, actually, how many days are you guys going to ride on this team camp? And then what did we do today and why did we do it?
So this is our short season beginning team camp. So it's going to be 3 days long. We'll then have a longer one as we get farther into the season. We have a week long training camp that we do in Mammoth Lakes every year for some altitude training. So this is the first time to get together. Guys get a lot of new gear. Guys start riding with one another, see each other. You know, they spend a lot of time on the road. Our team travels a lot, which you'll probably hear the guys talking about. So they know each other well, and they spend a lot of time together. And the off season is the time where they don't see each other nearly as much. You know, so these guys, the last race that most guys were together, they were at the tour of Poyang Lake in China in September. So like they did, you know, two super hard weeks of racing in China and everyone was shattered and that's the end of the season, you know, and then we come, you know, a few months later, they come back and everyone resets.
Just recovered.
Everyone's been doing really hard training at home. You know, we follow each other. We have a very active team communication over Slack that we do. So guys talk a lot, but this is the first time they see one another in person. My goal at team camp is this is a chance for me to evaluate where they're at with their fitness and for them to self-evaluate where they're at with their fitness.
Speaking of that, one of the things that we did today, so on our ride was we had a 20-minute hill climb time trial, individual time trial. So you intentionally laid that out, correct? And then what do you plan to do with that type of data that you get from that?
Sure. Yeah. So today was a shorter ride. People were arriving this morning and we were getting all ready to go. So we rode 54 miles, I think the guys went, something like that. And we basically did a warm up and then we rolled down to a bottom of a 1500 foot climb. That's like a 7% climb. Takes about in the ballpark of 20 minutes. You know, I guess there's a pretty large range. You know, Sam Boardman across the table from me went very, very fast up that. So it only took him 18 minutes. I don't know if that's cheating or not, but because it took me a lot longer. I did more suffering. So, but the idea for that is, for me, it gives me a sense of where guys are going. I also, and how well they're riding at this time of the year. And I am fully aware that people are at different points in their season. So we have this squad flying the Dominican Republic. These are the guys that I'm expecting to see. Some of them team leaders going for results, other ones going there to help their team leaders out and to build fitness. I also know we have guys that have been dealing with injuries that have goals later in the year who are coming to this much, much more slowly. And for those guys, I think a lot of these tests are much more self-assessment. It's great to get a base season, you know, a baseline 20-minute test. I mean, you guys know all about testing because with Trainer Road, you do that all the time, you know, and you're able to set some FTPs, get your power numbers in a time that you're motivated. And there's nothing more motivated than when you have your 15 teammates also smashing up a hill right behind you.
I want to, like, people don't realize how fast you guys are. You guys are so fast. Boardman, I saw your results. So for those, how many, 18 minutes? What was your average power?
So I think the time was 1806. The time was 1806. And I think average power for that was 451 watts.
What?
And I mean, for people listening, I'm about 75.3 kilo right now as I weighed myself this morning.
No one knows what that means.
What's that in pounds?
75.3 kilo, right. I also have my Wahoo set to kilometers because I'm a European aficionado. That's probably about like 166 LBS. But yeah, today was super hard. It's also very humbling to know that, you know, the KOM is still stands from 2012 by Adrian Costa when he did that as a 15-year-old. So
wow,
that
so
is.
Can we give him my experience? Then we can get like an average Joe, very not impressive thing. So I did it in 23 minutes and I averaged 311 watts and I'm weighing like 148 pounds. So, and that's, and I mean, I'm not like an untrained cyclist or anything else.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You're not an average Joe.
No, no. But compared to
superhuman.
Compared to these guys though, exactly right. So, I mean, you guys are, these are serious athletes training for like serious goals that we're dealing with here. Mm-hmm. So it's on a different level.
So are you guys, you guys are going to race in a stage race. How many days is the stage race going to be?
Five this year? Six this year.
6 days.
And then we have two athletes that aren't actually training for the stage race and they're in a different spot in their training too. So we'll get to that too. Back to the stage race though.
Are you guys, is this like peak fitness for you guys? Are you doing a taper for this race or is this just part of like a stepping stone in your season?
I think this early, like obviously you've been training really hard for this. Like I've been, you know, we've known about this for a while. So, and we've known the squad for a while, which is nice. Kind of rare, but these six guys, I'm sure six of us, right? Yeah. Have all been training really hard. And I think today, like Phil said, that 20-minute effort is a good indicator of how you're going to go because not much is going to change in your fitness in four or 5 days, right? So you're where you're at. So,
but it's not necessarily like, would you say this is like where your peak is at?
No,
like,
not at all.
Yeah, absolutely not for me. I have a difficult time training into shape. I'm very good at racing into shape. And so I use this race as like a 700 miles of motor pacing.
Sounds pleasant.
You know, going, there are a couple things that I do going into the Dominican Republic that are a little different than other races. And mainly that deals with the heat and humidity. Because, you know, it's January, February when we're training for this race. So I do some VO2 max stuff to try to get ready for some of the punchy climbs. But then the big thing that I do is I actually do trainer rides with a thermal jacket on.
I'll do
VO2 max intervals on the trainer with a thermal jacket on until my brain like stops working. And then you just, you take it off and you go take a cold shower.
Do you find that after, how often would you do that?
I did maybe four or five of them.
Did you find that at the end it didn't hurt as much?
No, it always sucks. Okay. It's probably not something you really should do, but it like, I'm horrible in the heat. You have to heat acclimate for a race like that. I shaved off probably 3 pounds of body hair before this race also.
If you ever get to see a picture of Blake, you'll see that he's quite a hairy guy.
The bike racer formerly known as Jesus.
We actually did a podcast episode that you can listen to on heat adaption and that whole process. Because what you're doing, there's science to back that up.
But not at VO2 max. You can go easy and get the same adaptions.
It's a true story.
Just so you know.
Yeah. I'm killing two birds with one stone here.
Yeah, so that's so you've got the training that you've been doing, but you're also, even though this isn't the peak, because really like something that we talk about a lot is, as you get close to peak fitness, you really want to make sure that your training is getting more specific to what you're going to face on race day. So even though this isn't your peak though, that's really like clever ways to make things more specific to what you're actually doing. That's an interesting point. Yeah. Absolutely.
Obviously I train indoors a lot working for Trainer Road, but I also have a full-time job. So I do 4 or 5 rides a week on the trainer. And then this year, my theory is that like FTP is king, right? Like if you have a high threshold, everything else is easy.
Yeah.
So I actually did the 40K TT, a lot of like the 40K TT specialty. I got as far into that as I could before this. So I think I did 3 weeks of it.
Smart.
But I think that would be the specificity that I chose to try to, because I know that I'm probably either going to be pulling back breakaways or being in breakaways at this race.
Yeah, so let's talk. Can we jump to the stage race? Or you want to do something else first, Jonathan?
Let's do it. Yeah, let's talk. And then what we're going to, actually, before we get into the stage race stuff too deep, so you guys are all prepping for the stage race, rare and ready to go. Tori, Jacob, you guys are not going to a stage race. What are you looking to get out of camp? Like, whereas you guys are, I guess, kind of like getting an indication, kind of like that final checkbox of where you're at, and you're not necessarily looking to, I'm sure you're not really looking to add on a lot of miles because those are going to happen very soon, or kilometers for you in this case. but you're not trying to like add those on necessarily because you're going to get plenty of it coming up soon. But for you guys, is it any different? Are you looking at this as kind of like, once again, perhaps like kind of like a kickstart to the season, or what are you going for?
So for me, it's kind of a good way to gauge where I'm at. This off season was the first time really had like a big lifestyle change where I'm working a lot more and haven't had the luxury to go ride as much as I would like to. So training weeks haven't been as huge as they've been in the past. So it's been a good way to kind of gauge how I've changed because of that and see where I am. And for me too, also to find a lot of motivation. Like when you see Boardman go 18 minutes up a hill, kind of like, okay, I need to work on a few things here, but it's a good way to motivate yourself and get in some hard efforts and miles as well.
And how about for you, Jacob?
Yeah, I would say it's motivating, and you know, similar to Tori, I have a slower approach going into this season as well. So yeah, it's just a good gauge.
What races are you planning on targeting this year? How far out do they sit from right now?
I'm kind of playing it by ear, but I would say late spring and summer races. You know, it'd be good to be going good for those.
Awesome.
How competitive are you guys with each other on like that 20-minute climb? Like, it seems like you guys are super competitive.
Yeah, they've been talking about this on our group chat since Poyang Lake ended.
You've been talking about this on our
group
chat.
Yeah, I was going to say, right. Phil, you might be the most competitive right. one out of everybody.
Phil does talk this a
is
lot.
So if we're talking about where we are in season, this is my peak form, right? However sad that is.
Phil put in
So this is what I go week. For. So yeah, I put in my biggest week of training in the last 2 years. I did 180 miles. Last week,
and that's then absurd that you're this fast with.
and then I tapered heavily for this to be able to try to go fast today.
I would like to chime in one more thing, actually, from training camp. That's kind of nice. Is, you know, we have a couple new faces on the team. I think we've got 4 new guys this season, and for me, it's really nice to get a feel for like how they are as riders. And most of them I know from racing and stuff, but not like super well what their strengths and weaknesses are. And you know, getting to do some serious miles with them, some hard miles with them, you kind of better able to gauge them as a rider. And I think that helps a lot for the rest of the season.
Phil, as the director, are you trying to breed competition with each other, like a sense of competitiveness?
I certainly am hoping that people are competitive with themselves, and trying to be better, with the team. You know, at training camps, this is the perfect time to have competitiveness. These guys are all, understand the sport of cycling enough and racing enough to know that with one another and when they are on the road, we are a team. You know, it is this team at the Dominican Republic is very clear that Sam Boardman is their leader and the other guys are going to be helping Sam Boardman as he's riding GC for this race. And so in terms of competition, there's no one else that's going to this is like, you know, I'm going to take down Boardman, which if they did, they'd be idiots. He went so fast today.
But I mean, like, just for the climb, like, you want to have like this is an epic, or like a, you know, you want people to come into that 20 minute climb today to be as fast as they can. Are you trying to get them to compete on that?
I want them to be as fast as they can on the day. I want to see full out honest efforts, right? And that is something, full out motivated honest efforts, so you could have a true self-assessment of where you are in your fitness. As you guys know from doing lots of FTP tests and threshold tests, as you're doing that through Trainer Road, you know, sometimes you do that, and if you're just like not feeling it, your numbers show it. So you guys and athletes at home certainly should be encouraging themselves, like, do everything you can right, because you want to stick a big number there. And we do the same thing. We want to go fast up this climb. And so it is fun for guys to compare all the time. It's always humbling for me to just get smoked by these guys too. So
as far, like, you mean in competition with all of us?
Yeah, not like, during the race, but in training. Just, like, when you guys hit a big hill.
I told Blake somebody, that I was going to beat him today.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was my goal. As long as I beat Blake, I win.
He got me by 13 seconds today.
13 seconds sounds familiar, Nate, doesn't it?
Jonathan beat me by 13 seconds. That's the closest I've ever been on to him.
It's true.
By minutes.
I call him Fast Nate now. So
yeah, just yeah. Phil pulls up the Strava. Yeah.
So they are competitive, just so you guys know.
And I think that's something that I could definitely see where, like, a competitive nature could be bad for a team if it goes too far. It's bad in one way, but it's not. It's something that you're really, I'm sure, trying to foster to a certain extent, or appropriately, like, harbor that here. So,
Jonathan, actually, I think, like, what you're getting at is totally correct. You know, to be a very good competitive elite team, like, at the level of racing that we do, you have to be completely committed to selling yourself out for a teammate. You can't, you know, you can't all be going into a race with the expectation to win.
That's a really good point.
So let's segue. Let's go into the race.
I'm telling you, he's a podcaster. It's great.
Again, how many days is this race going to be?
Six.
6 days? Someone
put
their hands up.
Team captain just signaled six. That's good.
And you guys are riding for Boardman. He's the guy who did 452 watts for 18.06.
Yes.
Right?
So we will definitely be riding for the overall for Boardman. There will probably be two or three potential sprint stages, which in the past we have done decently at. We got our first UCI points last year in this race on a flat-ish course. And I think with myself, Gavin, and Quinton, we've got some pretty decent sprint ability. And so if the situation is right, we might, you know, we'll set up for something like that. But the rest of the time, we will be selling out for Mr. Boardman.
So if you're on a flat stage, what would make the situation right? Where you would, I'm guessing you would use some fitness to get you guys in a good spot. But wouldn't that maybe hurt your overall GC efforts too?
Well, it depends on how we approach the stage. I think I've never raced Dominican, so I'll be looking to Blake and Dave for advice on what the profiles are like, what the climbs are like, and also what the weather is going to be like. Apparently, the flatter days can be ravaged by crosswinds, and so for those flatter days where we may be oriented towards a sprint win, I'll just sit in the rear in an echelon, and hopefully we'll still be able to drill it and, you know, split the field if possible. But really, it's just going to be a matter of me just sitting and, you know, waiting for the sprint stage to come, and then I'll just drop back once the GC is safe within, you know, 3 kilometers to go, and I'm not worried about losing time on the sprint stage and just staying safe in the pack. But at the same time, like, if there's a sprint stage and there's a chance where I can still help a teammate out without completely jeopardizing or, you know, jettisoning myself out the back, then I'll do it. Because in some of those cases with a flat stage, it's really easy to recover if you can just get in the wheels. And so, you know, if I'm feeling okay, I'll be willing to help, say, in the last couple bits of the race, last couple K, to just position a teammate, and then I can just go to the back and then sit and stay safe from the wind. Because we were able to do that in Poyang last year.
Yeah, so you're actually not allowed to go sit at the back in these fields. Yeah. They're pretty terrifying.
By sit at the back, I meant at the back of the train. But I think racing internationally last year in China really taught me that you got to be at the front just for safety's sake. But yeah, like last year at Tour of Poyang Lake in China, which is an 11-day stage race in the southeast area of the country, in some of the cases, for some of the stages, I was still able to help out some of the teammates for the sprint stages and set them up while still maintaining a GC position. Because by doing, in some cases, what it meant was I would go off the front and attack, which in the last couple K of a race, I know that within myself, even if I do get caught, I'm not going to get dropped by the pack and lose time. But in that case, if I do actually like get a result in that case, or if I do, you know, win the stage, I can gain time on the pack, and that's a benefit to me, but it also is a benefit to the teammate going for the sprint win, just because then they don't have to chase and they can have the, you know, a lead out from some other team.
That makes sense. Dave, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to say that Blake and I and Nate Fried's going with us. We all, and Quentin, we all have done this race before. And I think not even it's just the knowledge of like what the terrain is like or the roads or the, what we, you know, the hotels, they're not great, but it's also, they race differently. Like the locals race a lot differently than in the US, and they race differently than they do in Asia. Just it, sometimes you'll be up the road with guys and you will not, they do things that do not make sense. You have to be prepared for that, because you might be putting a lot of energy into this breakaway. You're up the road, but it's not worth it because they're not racing like you're used to.
So that's a good point. Cause I think people play poker, and like good poker players are like, you know, someone new comes over, like, what are you doing? And then the bad person beats them. Right. But like, that's not the rules. How can you do that? You bluffed with nothing. Dave, how is it different? Do they race down there than versus the US?
Yeah, what is different?
So Blake and I have raced in Central America together, like what, five times, four times?
At least.
And it's all pretty similar, but even country to country, it can be a little different. But you'll get in a situation where you're up the road with four guys and you're like, in the US, you're like, sweet, this is gonna go, either this is gonna have legs and it's gonna go, or if I feel like it's not, I'm gonna sit up and just go back. But you'll feel like that's, like it's gonna go, the brake's going to stick, or you're going to be in the brake for a while, and then they'll start attacking the breakaway
like immediately.
And you're just like, what are you doing? Like, I mean, full on attacks, like they're trying to get away from the brake, but you still have 100 miles to race. So that makes no sense.
The same situation actually applies if you get dropped on a climb, which I do occasionally, and you're off the back with like 10 people, and they'll all just like sit on your wheel on the flats. And then as soon as you get to a climb, they just attack you, and you catch them on the downhill on the flat, and then they just sit on you. And it's like, guys, like we're 20 minutes off the back right now. Like just rotate.
We can work together. So is it, do you guys think that that's like a, so stepping back really quick, that's something that we've identified as like a key thing that you should try to do whatever race you're going into, is if you can know your actual competition, like know how they race, that's a huge advantage. In these situations where you go into a stage race and you don't know who they are or how they're going to race, it could be really tricky. Is there anything that you do to accelerate that learning process, or are you guys really like focused on that, like trying to figure out who people are on the first day or so?
So a side sad note on that same note is that there was 12 doping positives recently at the Tour of Costa Rica, and some of the people who got popped there we race against down in the Caribbean. And so I'm hoping that maybe cleans up the culture a little bit down
okay.
there.
Gotcha.
It is a sad thing going to race, you know, in Latin America and Asia, like doping is prevalent, mm-hmm. and it's just something that like it's the testing rarely happens. It's incredibly expensive. A lot of these races don't have much money. And, you know, you just kind of have to go into the race knowing that like, okay, I'm probably not going to do so hot on the overall because like this 190-pound sprinter can climb with Sam Boardman sort of thing.
but at the same time, like that doesn't discourage me personally, because the way I look at it is you got to race who turns up, and that's how it is. It doesn't matter. And to accelerate that learning process, like you were talking about.
Yeah.
We have six chances, right? There's 6 days. So hopefully the first day you kind of get a pecking order throughout the peloton. You might know, you'll know who the GC guys are, just the way everybody rides, the teams ride for each other. But you'll get a feeling, like if you've never done a race in this country or don't know the people, the first day you'll get a good idea.
Do you guys know, I'm guessing it's the same course every year?
No.
No? Looking at the, have you guys planned and do you know like this is going to be Sam's day or this we're going to attack here. We want to be like, do you guys have plans already for each day or is it going to change?
So how do you come up with those?
Yeah.
So most of those will probably be kind of in my brain based on how the course is and stuff. And there's in the past, and so I've done it the past 2 years now. There's really like three critical stages. And they have duplicated a lot of them. Sometimes they change them up a little bit. Best news for us is that one of the stages from previous years has been taken out, which was a team time trial. Caribbean and Latin American races love to do team time trials because it puts any foreign team at like a 3 minute disadvantage from the first stage.
Why is that?
Because they know it's prohibitively expensive for foreign teams to travel with time trial bikes, for, you know, six or eight riders. And so you do a 20K triple T and a lot of local teams get to have eight riders instead of six riders.
Make that thing 100K. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So that's really good news for us. And then the three stages that are pretty big, one of them Dave was talking about earlier, it's just this brutal crosswind stage. Totally looks like, you know, Belgian style racing, huge echelons for like, I don't know, 40 or 50K. And then it finishes with a 1500 foot climb. And you know, staying in that front echelon is huge. Last year, we were ready for it. And I think we got two guys in the front split. And then I think four of us were in the second split, which was pretty solid. And then there was also one stage with a 3,000 foot climb. Yeah. So that'll be that's a pretty brutal one.
So do you guys, so this is from your past experience, you can definitely rely on that. When you went in the first year or even this year, do you look at course maps or do you analyze them that way or how do you actually analyze the course?
Yeah, so Nate's actually pretty clutch about that. So information for these races is very limited and it's really unusual for US stuff to not have any course maps or information and stuff. And so you have to kind of go outside your comfort zone and they'll tell you this race is 180 kilometers and it goes through these four cities.
Wow.
And like that's about it. And so you kind of have to kind of figure it out, extrapolate what the course is going to be, maybe based on previous years, based on, you know, Strava information, stuff like that. And so Nate in the past has done a really good job about, you know, mapping out potential ride routes and basing it off that. Occasionally we will get more information, fingers crossed.
That's not me too. Nate's on their team.
I'm not feeding them info.
None of that. after each stage, do you guys like, I want to call them like in the business world a postmortem, but do you guys talk about like you sit down and say this went well, we can improve on this, like what can we change, and then tomorrow based on, you know, what happened today, what we should do the next day?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's sometimes long transfers, so you're on a bus for 2 to 5 hours sometimes, depending on where you're at. Yeah, and there's a lot of talk. I mean, it's all, I've never really been in a team where it was like ever counterproductive, but it's always productive and kind of a good criticism of like, we did this wrong, we need to change this tomorrow. Or there's also you take away the positives too, as in a postmortem too. You could be like, we did this really well, we need to do more of this. Mm-hmm. It's definitely like that. I mean, you're kind of in a little bubble too, because we will all be in like dorm style rooms, you know. Well, I think probably our whole team except might sleep in the same room. So you're really in this bubble.
So, and jumping, I guess, a little bit back on this. So nutrition, I think, is just a topic that I want to touch on because Nate was up there for our first day, but then his bike broke. But we did our first like legit stage race this year instead of just like a local regional stage race. And it was a mountain bike stage race and I sucked so bad at the nutrition part, like so bad. It wasn't even necessarily on the bike, but it was afterward, like in taking in that nutrition that I needed to. It was really hard to eat enough and it was hard to be able to, I guess, eat the right stuff and everything else. I can only assume it's even more complex for you guys. How do you manage the nutrition part of a stage race?
Yeah, so the transfer thing gets really tough and I think we've actually got it ironed out pretty nicely. And this isn't just like a total sponsor plug. We actually do this, by the way. But we'll pack little bags, we throw them in the team car. And then at the end of the stage, our director, who's generally a Guatemalan buddy of mine who
we drag out to these races and hooks us up. He'll have, you know, Cokes. We'll have like some H24 recovery powder and stuff ready, bananas. And then for the long bus ride, you know, the transfers back that Dave was talking about, like we'll just slap on our Mark Pros. And, you know, you always want to bring a change of clothes, baby wipes so you can, you know, clean
quick
up.
Shower. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Do the homeless shower and stuff. And then, you know, we'll just sit on the bus and zap our legs for 2 hours, 3 hours. And you know, when we get back to the accommodations, which are prison-like, you know, they provide food for us, which is awesome. And you know, generally it's chicken, rice and beans, but like it works and it's free. So
this race doesn't sound like much fun.
It's so fun.
So much fun.
It's so much fun.
It's so fun. Go ahead, Dave. I'm an old man compared to these guys, and I'm still having fun with it. So once it's not fun, then I won't do it. I mean, you have to have fun with this.
You mentioned, so you've spoken just in personal conversations before, you've mentioned that the nutrition part is particularly, like, it's kind of challenging. Yeah.
I'm bringing food with me. I'm bringing some breakfast food mostly because I'm actually trying a suggestion from Nate, trying to take down more carbs before I race.
Good man.
And I'm bringing peanut butter and Nutella and stuff like that because it's not that you can find that stuff there, but you're like on the move all the time. So it's better just to bring it. Like you can't be like, hey, I'm going to go do a grocery run because you want to be on your back on the bed with the Mark Pro going.
Yeah.
Even just like I drive from Reno to Sacramento, like going to the grocery run takes like an extra hour, right? So why not just bring it with you?
It is amazing. You know, we're racing 3 to 5 hours every day and your entire day is shot. Like you literally have like, maybe you can call your girlfriend if you're lucky sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know that may sound silly perhaps to people, but it's totally true. Like it's
totally true.
It's consuming. It's entirely consuming.
Boardman. So you're putting out 451 watts for 1806, 452?
Sure.
Anyway, that's a lot of power. So what people might not know too is that that's ties with calories, right? So you're actually putting out more energy, like way more than I am. How much are you eating? And do you find it hard? Like, do you know how many, do you ever track calories? Do you know how many calories you just eat till you're full?
Obsessively. I don't necessarily recommend this to a lot of people just because I think it can be, I do genuinely think that it can lead to some like problematic eating habits if you start to track your calories. And I know myself, I suffer from some eating disorders in high school. And so I didn't want to jump into that when I started cycling. But I slowly like worked my way up to it and being like mentally ready to do that again. And so I started doing that last year during the summer, because at one point I realized in my season, which last year, part of the program that my coach and I, decided upon was just biting off more than I can chew and seeing where I cracked, and just figuring out. Cause last year, yeah.
Sounds fun.
Oh, it was a blast. Like I have fun anecdotes about that, at the end of the season if we have time later. But basically last year I, between June, the middle of June, right when I got out of school for the summer and say the beginning of August, I was racing almost every single week. So I was racing pretty much 6 weeks straight. The whole point of that was to see just what my body was able to handle. And, you know, I found the limit and I went past it and it was a dark hole.
We had some great phone calls during that time.
I'm sure.
I think I called Phil at one point, just like, I can't do it anymore. Like, I hate my bike.
So how many, do you know how many actual calories you might eat during a stage race?
So calories per day. So the past, I would say 6 weeks, I've been in like really serious training block. And on those like longer 5 to 6 hour days, I'm probably putting out something like, you know, upwards of 4,000 kilojoules, which translates probably to something like 5,000 calorie deficit. So on those days, in the beginning of the morning, pretty much like clockwork, I crush a big bowl of oatmeal, some like nut butter in it, honey, or maple syrup and a banana. And then on the ride, I'll pack like an actual sandwich, like turkey, lettuce, meat, just because, I don't know, you can only eat so many like sugar.
Because it's easy to eat, right?
Yeah,
right.
And you can only eat so many sugar-based bars before you just get, you know, kind of sick of them and you want something savory. And, you know, on long 6 hour rides, like you ride through your lunch hour and you just like, you don't want to have a bar for lunch. And so I pack legit sandwiches.
Do they get hot?
They get kind of moist.
Oh. Gross.
They get kind of grody. So on those days, I'll eat probably, I keep track of the calories throughout the rides just because, you know, I hate bonking on training rides because then the rest of the ride sucks and, you know, I want to enjoy riding my bike. So I tend to, on those longer days, go between, you know, the rule of thumb I have is between 300 and 500 calories per hour, depending on the intensity. And so that equates to maybe, you know, two Nature's Bakery bars or like a full on sandwich per hour or something like that. And then after the ride, I'll immediately, like, one, you know, 2 seconds from when I'm in the door, I hang my bike up. I make a recovery shake with some H24 rebuild or something like that.
So I think that one thing I want to end with, because we've covered different goals that riders may have for a team camp and everything else like that. But just ending on a stage race note, if somebody was going into a stage race, let's say that they've only raced like 1 day races before, or maybe they've done like a 2 day type of a thing, but if they're going into like a legit multi-day stage race, what's just one quick bit of advice that you would give them? Like what you feel personally would be the most important thing that you could give them in just like a short little bit.
Bring a spare derailleur hanger.
Oh, that's a really good one. I didn't anticipate that. Hard to find. Dave. Yeah.
Are we talking like international or just any kind of stage race?
Yeah, I guess you can decide there.
I guess it always depends on the race, but I think if it's your first one, the first couple of days sit in a little bit and try to, because if it's, you know, 5 days, actually the year I did Poyang Lake, I was so cracked at day 7 and we got a rest day after that. And I was so thankful. Like I seriously thought that I was going to DNF.
Yeah.
I got through that day and then I think the year I did it was 12 days. God. And then my fitness trended up after that. Like,
yeah.
So I guess when you're really taxing your system and to areas you're not familiar with, those first couple of days, just sit in and be conservative. Because if it's 5 days, that's a big step up from a 1 day race.
If we are talking about international stage racing, one more thing is to just like, you have to have an open mind going into these races and like chill out. A lot of bike racers are super high strung and like have incredibly strict regimens that they have to follow.
Dude, you don't know triathletes. Like they're a whole nother level. Like triathletes chill out at your Ironman.
Well, so we had Justin Rossi on our team and I always wanted him to come do one of these races because I was like, he would just smash these guys in the flats and stuff. And everybody was like, Rossi could not deal with it. And yeah. You know, it's just like a lot of these places, they start the race 45 minutes or an hour late. And, you know, you look at them and you're like, what's up? And they're just like, it's island time. And like, all right, like whatever, just go with the flow. And so you just, you know, you have to kind of just be ready for anything and just kind of take a breath and take a step back a lot of the time.
Awesome.
I just wanted to comment on the volume that Boardman rides is not, a lot of people can't do that.
Yeah.
So I'm for a different perspective, I'm going into this with like probably 12 hours a week average. Mm-hmm. You know, that's about what I can do with mm-hmm. work and everything. And I think because I've been pedaling my bike for a long time, I just have a pretty decent base already.
Old man strength.
Old man strength, as they call it.
Yeah, but like you can do it off, you know, you can do it off 12. I'm
totally
like, I'm not going to win this race, but I can be a factor in the race.
Yeah. The caveat that I would say is I think Dave's totally right. Like the 24 hour weeks, if you're doing like a 3 day local stage race, you don't need to be doing that. Sure. For me, I just think like it definitely would make a 5 day stage race easier if you do have the volume or fitness. But like Dave said, I mean, people race and do incredibly well with full-time jobs. I definitely think that off of, you know, a 10 to 12 to 15 hour week, you can make it work completely. Totally. And it's like, I mean, Trainer Road offers plenty of programs. Like I know Dave works a lot with the Trainer Road programs, which can concentrate the 6 hour days that I do into something like 2 hours. And that just can accommodate the working person way more.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good plug. Good plug.
Why I'm here.
Tori, what tips would you give somebody if they're going into their first stage race?
For me, I think a big thing. So cyclists are notorious to overanalyze everything. So instead of looking...
We know that well.
Yeah. So instead of looking like, oh, you get to stage one and you're thinking about stage four, it's you got to take it day by day. And it goes the same way with if like stage one isn't so good, stage two isn't so good either. Like... don't focus on those days. Each day is like a new day. You can go out different plan the next day. Don't let what happened the previous days discourage you.
Awesome.
It's, yeah. I think that's been a big thing I've learned over the years.
I wanted all these tips before I did my stage race, especially that one. Jacob, if you were to give somebody one tip for a stage race, what would it be?
I would just say to stay on top of your, you know, your recovery game after each day, because the stress is so high on your body, especially when you get multiple days going. So like with a 1 day race, you can go out and eat junk food after the race and right. It doesn't really do anything, but you know, it's important to really, you know, put your feet up and eat good food.
Right.
And maybe put on a Mark Pro too. So
that was good signaling there, Phil. That was good stuff. Yeah. But yeah, you bring up a good point, and just something I want to touch on. This is going to seem like a plug for this too, but I don't use a Mark Pro, so I can say this, and it's not a plug. So, but I think that having something that you can do to kind of, like you mentioned, how we concentrate the training with Trainer Row, but concentrate the recovery a bit and make it more effective would be really, really helpful on a stage race. Like, we always talk about the difficulty with a lot of recovery aids is the fact that, like, well, this one makes you sit down, and otherwise you are really bad at just sitting down and doing nothing. But when you're talking about splitting hairs or doing anything else, those small little benefits that you can bring to your recovery would be huge. Because once again, I really sucked at that, and it definitely was tough for me. So
it can definitely be really hard to do when you're completely shattered from racing 100 miles or whatever to get up and, you know, roll your legs out or, like, you know, put on Mark Pro, like, stretch. You know, you have to do something.
Yeah.
It does make a huge difference, and it adds up every single day.
Awesome. Phil, do you have any suggestions? You've done plenty of stage races yourself.
Yeah, I think, you know, you've heard throughout all of this that these guys are mentioning about the chaotic nature of stage racing. So I think it is always good to, at the end of a day, to think about the things that are under your control, which are your attitude and your recovery, and focus on those. Your fitness, it's where it is. You're not doing anything else. All you can do is have a good attitude. Remember why you're there. Remember that you're strong. Remember that you wanted to do that at some reason, and you still want to do that if it's going poorly. And, you know, a day, whatever, 7 or 10 or 11 of the stage race that they're suffering in. And then really to think about your recovery. And that is what you should be putting your effort to, is things you can do to recover. I love that some guys made plugs for Mark Pro. It's a great way to recover. Mm-hmm. Laying down is a great way to recover. Eating properly is a great way to recover, and that's what you should focus on.
Yeah, do as many and all of that you can for it, for sure. This has been awesome. Thanks, guys. I feel like we got some really actionable tips on how to use a training camp, and then also how to prep for stage racing, which is becoming more and more popular for amateurs, even to you know, especially even here in the States. So this has been awesome. Nate, anything else to add?
Nope, that's it.
Cool. Well, thanks for joining us, guys. And if you want to know anything more about the team, you can look up Mark Pro Cycling on Facebook. You can look them up on Instagram. You can look them up anywhere else. They're a really fun team to follow because they're putting out content about their team's performance. And a lot of teams, you can't really say that. So you can follow them. They've got a ton of great personalities, and you can find the riders and follow them too. I really recommend it. It would be not just an entertainment thing, but it would be an insightful thing. I think you guys could learn from these athletes.
We should also plug their bike sponsor, KTM.
Yes, of course. We haven't mentioned that. Phil, are there any other sponsors that you would like to mention? And please, and this is good for us to do.
How long are you going to give me?
It's not that long, is it?
Yeah, I mean, the team is lucky to be supported by a host of great sponsors. Mm-hmm. I think you mentioned when you walked in the amount of gear that's here is pretty stunning. Sometime I should probably add up the dollar retail value of things that are given to the team, but it's like hundreds of thousands of dollars of gear to support us. KTM bikes, Ritchie components, Praxis cranks,
I've
been here today.
When you say cranks, you also mean power meters.
Cranks and power meters, yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. IRC tires, Token wheels. Jackru clothing has been a huge sponsor for us too. And Ben from Jackru has been joining us here. Gym One, which is a new sponsor to the team.
Awesome.
Based in Cambria, California.
Beautiful place.
We have our H24 recovery. Yeah, we are lucky to have all the sponsors we do.
I think it's really great.
Trainer Road as a sponsor, of course, too.
I saw Snap-on Tools on your jerseys.
Snap-on Tools as well. Yeah,
that is like the coolest sponsor I've ever heard of.
Yeah,
like, yeah, I mean, they're the coolest. I don't know. Nate's looking at me weird. I nerd out on good tools, and those are like the best tools you can possibly get.
They are the best tools you can get.
That's pretty awesome that you guys pulled that. That's really cool.
I have to make a note on our KTM bikes. they do not have motors inside of them.
Very good point. Very good point. But the reason that I'm mentioning this is because, and we're not going to go down this rabbit hole, so I'll basically make this like a rhetorical for all of us, basically. But the one thing I just want to say is that when we support the companies that support teams like this, I think that it just makes it so that we can have more racing. More racing means more opportunities for you guys to train for something. It means more opportunities for also for cycling to grow. So when you hear these companies and everything else, and if you have a purchasing decision, I recommend checking out the companies that are actually supporting cyclists like this. Namely Trainer Road, I guess.
Yeah, that's probably that.
With that, that plug, I guess we'll cut it off here. Dave, one last thing?
Just one last thing. I mean, we're totally personable. If you ever see us at a race, want advice, we're all open to it. Come talk to us. We'd be happy to talk to you and take selfies with you.
Awesome. Great. Very cool. Thanks, Dave. Thanks, guys. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.